In 2017, France's new president went to Paris's Sorbonne University to defend Europe's strategic autonomy. Since then, there's been COVID, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and now ahead of June's EU elections, Emmanuel Macron was back with an update.
Everything that is strategic in our world, we have delegated our energy to Russia, our security for several of our partners, not France, but several others, to the United States, and other critical interests also to China. We must take them back. This is what strategic autonomy is about.
So, how has Europe met those challenges so far? What to make of Macron's call for an acceleration of common defense and industrial policy? His claim that energy transition is compatible with growth and the polls. After all, this was a campaign speech, what with Marine Le Pen's far-right National Rally Party ahead, with nearly one-third of voter intentions, double those of Macron's centrists. Today in the France 24 debate, we're talking about Macron's plan for Europe. With us, Charles Rodwell, member of the French Parliament from Emmanuel Macron's Renaissance Party. Thanks
Good
for
evening.
Being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks as well to member of the European Parliament for the National Rally, Patricia Chagnon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
With us as well is from the far-left LFI party, Annabelle Huette.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And thanks as well to Sybille Duvier, candidate for the joint list Place Publique and the Socialist Party, which is polling third right now.
Good evening. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Your reactions, we'll look at the polls later. Your reactions on the hashtag F24. Debate. French president calling for ever-increased European unity to dispel doubts, and even he employed the term mortal dangers that could plague a Europe that he says is too timid for the challenges that face the 21st century. Emmanuel Macron's second Sorbonne speech, seen by Emerald Maxwell.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs.
Europe has reached a critical moment in a world where the rules of the game have changed. That was French President Emmanuel Macron's message in his speech at Paris's Sorbonne University.
We have to be clear on the fact that our Europe is mortal. It can die. It can die, and it depends solely on our choices, and we have to make those choices now.
Maintenant. Macron said Europe needed to be stronger and wake up to the major geopolitical threats surrounding it, the biggest being Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but also the war in Gaza and growing China-US tensions.
The sine qua non for our security is that Russia does not win this war of aggression that it is leading against Ukraine. We must bring about a new paradigm in terms of defense, meaning a credible defense of the European continent.
He called for the creation of a European academy to train high-ranking military personnel, closer defense ties with post-Brexit Britain, and a boost in Europe's cybersecurity capacity. Macron also said Europe risked falling behind economically and called for a reduction in red tape on small and medium-sized businesses.
It can't work if we're the only ones in the world who respect the rules of trade as they were written up 15 years ago. If the Chinese and Americans no longer respect them by subsidizing critical sectors, we can't be the only ones who do it.
The speech was billed as France's contribution to the EU's strategic agenda for the next 5 years, an agenda due to be decided after the European parliamentary elections in June, in which Macron's centrist Renaissance Party is trailing the far right.
Charles Rodwell, naming and shaming the United States and China over subsidies, is that the big difference with the speech from 7 years ago?
It's one of the big differences. We're in a century today which will be structured around the confrontation, between the United States and Russia, two hyperpowers, which are demographic hyperpowers, economic hyperpowers, industrial hyperpowers, and we have a choice to make. The choice that we make with President Macron and our majority is to unite Europe against its outside challenges and also the outside dangers and also against the inside challenges and the inside dangers, some of the political forces which want to take down European unity, take down some of democracies. We want to support such an agenda to defend our political liberty and to defend our political independence in the century to come. I think that's one of the key elements, one of the key issues that Macron, President Macron, has pointed out during his speech.
Who's the enemy within? Sorry.
I think some of the political forces present a true challenge.
Are you talking about French domestic forces or European domestic or European forces?
Well, both. I mean, political parties are running to take down the European Union. Some political parties refuse to support Ukraine against Russia. Some political parties want mass immigration in Europe. And we have decided to build over the past years and continue to build European unity around our countries to tackle such challenges against these parties.
Patricia Chagnon?
Yes, well, I think we all witnessed today the launching of the campaign by Emmanuel Macron for Valérie Ayer, who's trailing behind in the polls.
She's the head of the slate for Macron's party.
Yes, she's the main candidate for France for his party and the Renew movement within the EU Parliament. Yes, Macron is actually confirming what we're saying, that this is a mid-election campaign. We're at his midterm election for Mr. Macron. He is trying to launch this campaign, but by doing so, he is also saying that he's responsible for the dismal score that Valérie Ayer looks to be attaining in this election. He's also in this way trying to find a new political legitimacy by, you know, I thought it was a very much warlike speech, you know, the enemy from outside, the enemy from outside. But we have so many internal problems within the EU that he should really be addressing.
So when he talked, for instance, about doubling public investment over the next 5 years, in key sectors like defense, like industrial policy. Do you agree with that?
I would say that we first need to get the EU back on track and have more sovereignty.
Do you agree
for that? Can I please answer the question? Who is
asking
the questions? Mm.
Go ahead, Patricia.
Thank you. I think the key issue is not to be answering on these individual things. There are today two visions for Europe that are opposed. There is one vision says Europe is in trouble. We've had, you know, we have a war on our doorstep. We have had terrible problems with the farmers who are starving. Our energy prices are rising. So we have on the one hand Macron and the like saying, oh, to solve the problems, we need more Europe. And this is just forgetting that they've been there and that Macron has been there for many years. And on the other side, you have the vision that we defend and saying, if we want to save Europe, which we find so important and which we all adhere to and which is at the core of progress in on our continent, we must give sovereignty back to the nation states in order that their cooperation will yet again be fruitful and based on the cooperation and not on the enforcement.
Is it
by
when
Brussels.
You refuse to support Ukraine against Russia?
I'm answering.
No, it's a true question.
I want to get to the question of Ukraine in a moment. But first, let me just ask the question about the. At one point in the speech, he talked about, for instance, when he talked about more Europe, he talked, for instance, about the European Central Bank being about more than just pushing down the level of inflation, but also helping to stimulate growth. He talked about things like Europeans together working as a big trade bloc against the likes of the United States and China. Are you saying you're against that? You think those should be the remits of nations, not the European Union?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that this type of cooperation, I would like to really not be disturbed if I'm answering your question, which I would like to do. I am saying that if you want to have cooperation within the EU, and as we've seen over the past mandate, the EU has signed free trade agreements, has installed unfair competition, which was notably one of the main issues in the farmers' movements was, you know, the degradation of their financial situation due to unfair competition.
You're saying there should be less strategic cooperation?
There should be strategic cooperation which is democratically defined and which nation states participate.
So on defense,
according
for instance,
to
do you agree
their
with?
Interest. I would like to see interior security having more cooperation, but I believe that a country as France should be very reluctant to be sharing anything of its military and of its strategic military, of course, with other EU nations. Thank God that France had its independence and that we did not have anybody else with their fingers on the button of any nuclear weapons during the past conflict.
Excuse me, can I just point out one element? You criticised our agricultural policy.
Yes, definitely.
So why did you vote our agricultural package?
We voted.
You ask for more integration for interior issues.
If you ask
a
question, can I answer it?
So why did you vote against the immigration control package?
I think you're being
package?
Very rude in asking me a question and not letting me answer.
I'm just asking simple questions.
No, if you want
not
to
understanding.
My dear colleague, if you want to make a point, but don't do it pretending
just
you have a question.
One.
No, you all voted very recently for the Nature Restoration Act, for example, which is part of the Green Deal. And we've seen the results on the revenues of our farmers Europe-wide over the past couple of years. We have never seen such huge movements in EU member states. It started in the Netherlands with the suppression of livestock farmers. It spilled over into Germany, into Spain, into France, because with these policies of free trade, we can see that there has been an unfair competition installed, which is undermining our agricultural sectors. And this is a perfect
example.
It's
very hard to understand.
Well, maybe you should work on your English.
Let's keep it simple. Oof. Let me bring in C.B. Duvillier on this, because the question of what we heard in the speech, almost 2 hours that speech, talking for more Europe in the strategic sectors, joint procurement, for instance, this sort of thing, trade deals that need to be reviewed in some cases, like Mercosur with the South Americans, but approved in others, like the one with Canada. Your thoughts on whether it's more Europe or the vision you heard there from Patricia Chagnon, where there should be more, the remit should be given back to nations, individual nations?
Today, I think that we need better Europe. And you have mentioned that during the past 5 years, Europe has come through many big crises. COVID, the invasion of Ukraine. So these crises have open breaches for more cooperation between the European states. For example, for the first time, we contracted the debt together to face the COVID crisis. But President Macron, on the other end, never rose the occasion to have more social Europe. For example, the directive on the in order to give rights to the workers of the platform, for example, Uber platforms, he blocked just recently this directive, and Macron presents himself also as the big chief of the European diplomacy in order to help Ukraine. But, you know, there was a lot of back and forth initially at the invasion of Ukraine. For example, he said that we shouldn't humiliate Russia. So, you know, there is an anecdote in Ukraine since the beginning. They use the word Macronite in Ukrainian, Macroné, about the fact that denouncing a situation and not doing the best for it to help the Ukrainian resistance. So today we need a better Europe of social justice. Each time we could go through major victories, he blocked them. So I think that the fact that today he's very low on the polls, it's because of this policy during the seven past years.
Annabelle Huet, do you agree?
I'd just like to come back to what was being said right before when Mrs. Chagnon said that there are only two options in this election. I'd just like to point out that there's four of us, first of all, around this table, and there's actually more than two options.
Absolutely.
And there's actually a social option and an environmental justice option, and that's the one that is led by Manon Brie. And it was interesting, I found, that you would talk about the Platform Work Directive, because that is one of the most concrete victories that one of our MEPs, Leila Chabi, has managed to obtain. And the vote this week was a huge success in terms of what our MEPs have been able to do in the European Parliament and what we're planning on doing for the next 5 years coming as well. I'm sorry, what was your question?
just to complete, the directive on the platform workers was at the initiative of Nicolas Spitz, which is our Spitzenkandidat to the European Commission.
But we thank Leila Chabi for the help. You're saying, you're both agreeing on this, are things that have to be regulated at the European level, not at the nation state level.
Well, I think what was quite interesting is that Macron did not even mention them. And I think coming off a year of social unrest in France because of the pensions reform, and might I remind us that 9 workers out of 10 were against this reform, and Macron knows this. Mm. And it's quite interesting that that was the one thing that he didn't mention. And in terms of environmental justice, the only thing he said was that there were too many norms and that they were hampering
He also said
growth.
That we should stop opposing growth and the decarbonization, that was his word, decarbonization.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know if that's a word, of the economy.
Yeah, I don't
and
really
he
know
was,
what that means.
Well, what he meant was, and he said, he explained, was that you can invest heavily in green technology and that this will create jobs and promote growth. Do you agree with that,
Ben? No, absolutely not. I don't agree with that because one of the things that we did in the transport sector where I used to work before was the idea that you can't keep building cars and hoping for them to get better and just have them on the roads and expect for the environment to just suddenly get better.
But he talked about things like green hydrogen. He talked about things like... less carbon footprint.
Well, I mean, that's all good and well, but Macron is a hypocrite. In the last 7 years that he's been in power, nothing has gotten better. In fact, energy prices have shot up by 56% in the last 2 years. Mm. So I think that is the track record of Macron, both in Europe and in France. And he might be at the Sorbonne and pretending that he knows what he's talking about, but actually... There was nothing in there. It was not.
Charles Rodwell, by the way, we will get to that Ukraine topic.
No,
but
worries.
First, on this issue...
I will reply.
On this issue, and particularly because there was this sense, at several points in the conversation, Emmanuel Macron talked about less red tape,
of course.
Which will be music to the ears of the farmers that were protesting, mm-hmm. but which is worrying a lot of environmentalists, saying
yes.
that...
First, on the energy issue, yes, the energy prices have shut up. It's... First of all, because Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine, which you refuse to condemn, Manon Aubry and Jean-Luc
true.
Mélenchon.
That is also very not true. I can't let you say that.
It is
I can't
absolutely
let you say
true.
That. And,
well,
if you're going to insist on cutting off...
We will get to it.
No, I mean, it's just not
I hope
true.
We'll get to it.
We voted
the fact is that today you have three visions on growth and on the carbon transition. You've got a degrowth vision...
I feel like this is going to be simplistic at them.
Absolutely not.
Really?
It's the carbon transition with degrowth. And I just ask one question. How do you fund your social services? How do you fund your public services?
Well, you're not
if you go down
you're
degrowth.
Them. You've
there is
really
a vision
which
is...
liberalizing our public services
well,
and
who's
cutting
been
them.
Cut now? Who's been cut?
I'm very worried. One at a time. Charles Rodwell.
Second, there is a vision which is no support to the carbon transition, which you carry. And we believe, we profoundly believe, that you can combine reindustrializing Europe, reindustrializing
France.
So why
France. Don't you do it?
Well, we are actually. Have you been to the north of France? I think
that's where I live, actually.
Exactly.
I'm elected there.
So
yes,
have you been to Douvrin, to the batteries company?
Well,
have you been to Dunkerque, to Vercors?
Yes.
Have you been to Dunkerque Prologium?
Have you been to Maubeuge, to Renault? Have you been to Whirlpool?
We're creating
have you been to Whirlpool
again?
In Amiens, where the people...
Absolutely,
which was closed
absolutely,
because with European subsidies
remember.
It was built.
You're still
no,
cutting
you're
me.
You're very simplistic.
You're still cutting me.
One at a time.
I do profoundly believe that you can combine the transition, the carbon transition today, and growth. And this is what we have to aim at for both our climate prosperity and the prosperity of everyone living in Europe. We are in a century which will be structured around the confrontation between the US and China. We have a choice. Either we promote European division or we promote European Union to guarantee our prosperity and the protection of biodiversity and the environment on a European scale.
All right, one at a time. Patricia Chagnon, can you go green and promote growth at the same time?
Yes, of course you can. Of course you can. But it starts with a different vision of how we want to promote environmentally responsible policies within the EU. And I think one of the first things to do is I have great difficulty in listening to my colleague sort of reading us the Right Act here when we see that they are signing the free trade agreements and importing with major container ships produce from all over the world. Where we stand for is first of all to promote local consumption. local production, local consumption, and local treatment of your waste so that we can have short circuits in the environment, in the basins where people live, rather than having trucks and transports and airplanes and cargo ships going all over the world. That's a very, very important issue. And they have not addressed that. They have been there. Macron is in his second mandate, and things have only gotten worse. Secondly, I think it's very important to be looking at what individual member states, what people need in individual member states. You cannot compare infrastructures in, for example, the Netherlands with infrastructures in France or in Poland. It is different. And try to have the one size fits all in the EU. I think people all over the EU have shown in the past elections that this doesn't work. You must let countries find their solutions, promote their solutions, rather than have Brussels dictating it and getting all the farmers' movements in Europe to protest, yes, on their national issues, but all finding that their main issues, their main problems, their tragedy all stems from Brussels. So I think it's very important to listen to the collective intelligence that we find in the EU member states rather than letting Brussels decide the one size fits all. It doesn't work, and it's not going to work in green policies.
Sybille Duvier.
Since the beginning of this debate, we assist to a duel between the Rassemblement National and Renaissance. It's a duel, you know, that exists for 7 years now. And, you know, I was 13 years old when Macron came to power. That means that I've only known this duel, which is a prefabricated duel. And you both have said that there are two visions of Europe. That's not true. And I really think that reducing the political fight to this is not true.
Okay, so and, on the question of the environment.
Yeah, and to answer to the question of where do we find the money to finance all the ecological transition we need to do right now because the emergency is there. Tax the rich. It's three words. It's really simple. We defend it since we defend it since 5 days, 5 years, and the great absence on the during the speech of this morning is the ecology. The only difference between the debate 7 years ago is that we could hear maybe 5 minutes of ecology 7 years ago. This morning, nothing. A little conclusion to say that nature has no more rights than the human. I don't know what that means. So where do we find the money? Tax the rich. And do you support it? Because as Emmanuel Macron said, as every expert said, we need to find billion. Where do we find them? Do we find them with the Gilets jaunes who protested because the poor people don't have to pay the disaster that the rich I think are responsible?
So we heard the president in his speech talking about carbon taxes at the border. Basically, he talked about raising taxes, but at the borders, not within the EU. What's the answer to this question about getting the rich to pay more and getting corporations to pay more?
We've overtaxed the French people for the past decades.
It depends all on which
them.
French people.
Can I just reply? We've been taxing them for the past decades. What has happened? Right wing, left wing combined. We have divided the part of the industry in our GDP from 20 to 10%. We have created massive poverty in France and in Europe, as opposed to the US and to China. The solution is to recreate employment, to recreate jobs. We have created since 2017 3 million jobs in France for two reasons. First, because we've led structural reforms. Second, because we've lowered massively the tax on the French and on our companies. And I absolutely admit it, that has had immense benefits to recreate jobs, to recreate industries in France and in Europe. I have to also analyse that Place Publique and the Socialist Party completely align with LFI and Manuel Aubry. I think it pretty much defines the three visions that you have for France and for Europe in this election.
I think you're letting us define our vision.
No, but this is just a concept that I make in this debate. You've got the very three, very clear visions for the European Union that were presented tonight.
Annabelle Huet.
Yes, I just wanted to say that in terms of the main announcements of Macron today. It was mainly about defence. And there was nothing in there about, for example, a post-gas world. What do we do with our armies when there will be no more gas in the world? What do we do with those? And a lot of what he said was about having a Europe that, a defence Europe, which, again, I'd like to remind people is not a competence of the EU, but whatever. And he's also clearly vying for more of a Franco-German relationship, which I find interesting because he didn't really talk about some of the problems that we have with this Franco-German relationship. I'll take one example. It's the main ground combat system, which is a Franco-German tank. And so the Germans on the side are developing their own system, the Leopard. And so they've got a plan B. If it doesn't work out, they've got a plan B. What do we have? I think today Macron gave a speech as if he were the president of Europe and not of France, and he forgot France.
Well, this is the perfect segue to what Charles Robert was asking about earlier, which is Ukraine. So when it comes to the war in Ukraine, what should the EU's position be and what should be the position vis-a-vis Russia?
I think one of the positions should be a ceasefire, and we should be looking
for a ceasefire now.
Yeah, we should be looking for peace negotiations as much as we can. And
wouldn't that be a win for Vladimir Putin?
No, I think what's important here is that you don't negotiate peace with anyone other than the other party, right? So Russia and Ukraine need to be around the table together and they need to negotiate peace. And we have set out a clear plan for how to negotiate peace. We have said since the start of the war that we need to start with the power plants and we need to send in UN blue helmets. And this will start a negotiation process between Russia and Ukraine to save what is left of those power plants in the Ukraine. And there's a resolution that was voted in 2022 in the European Parliament to safeguard those power plants. I think we should start there.
Sybille Duvillier, do you agree?
A simple question. Who started the war? Who aggressed Ukraine? It is Vladimir Putin. No, it just to respond to the fact that we could create a negotiation on border.
I didn't say that.
No, it's like what most of the time you say. Ukraine proposed it. Ukraine proposed different planes to build the peace because who is the big loser of this war? It is Ukrainians who are dying right now. So people really need to think that these elections.
So you're saying now's not the time for to ask for peace negotiations.
It's not the time because just to begin with. On the 9th of June, we are voting the first time in Europe, which is aggressed and under the attack of Vladimir Putin. And every inch of ground which is gained by the Russian army increases the threat that Putin is waging a hybrid war on our democracy. An example which is really concrete, you know, the hospital of Corbeil-Essonne. There was a cyber attack.
This is in the suburbs of Paris.
Yeah, it's in the suburbs of Paris. But also, lastly, you know, there were swastikas which were painted in Paris to create a climate of civil war. And Putin, lastly, in February, raised again the threat of a nuclear war. So who is the aggressor in this conflict?
Do you agree with that? It's been proven that the Russians have done these attacks, that they're, some call it a hybrid warfare directly against countries like France.
I think that, first of all, let's just say that for the record, that we totally condemn, of course, the invasion of a free nation state that has borders. That should be very, very clear. Of course. Secondly, we have seen now that the conflict.
But is Vladimir Putin actively working to undermine Western democracies like France with disinformation campaigns?
You're changing your question. So it's a simple question.
It was the question.
It's a simple question, which is essential for the future of France and Europe.
Yes. I don't need your advice on answering. Thank you very much. Mr. Putin aggressed Ukraine. We all thought the conflict was going to be of short duration and something was going to happen. We have now witnessed that this is dragging on. And what are we going to do? We're going to go and let this drag on, people be killed, sending weapons there. I agree with my colleague, and I'm not embarrassed to agree, that we need to be looking at peace. We need to invest every single euro we have, all our energy in having peace. I don't think...
I don't think
that the objective is to invade Europe. Russia is a very big country. It has many internal problems.
So why are there the disinformation campaigns and the cyber attacks?
Exactly.
Why is a disinformation campaign and the cyber attacks? Let the justice find out. Let our juridical systems find out how that exactly is articulated. Who is doing what in this conflict? I think we need to be looking at the facts in that we're having a war and we risk to be provoking, yes, a third world war with this conflict.
Sorry,
going
who's
on.
Provoking it?
Yes.
Both sides can be provoking this really? By the conflict going on.
If both sides.
If you want
the Ukrainian world dying right now.
If you keep sending weapons into a conflict, the war keeps going on. I think we need to concentrate on peace and enforce peace.
Charles Rodwell.
You mentioned that we had to look at facts. You just asked, yes. was Putin threatened? It was Putin threatening Western democracies. You were unable to reply. Just look at facts. Russia invaded Ukraine.
In
February 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine. April 2022, there was a resolution, a package to support financially Ukraine at the European Parliament. You voted against the resolution, the package, and your party wasn't able to vote in favor of it. Earlier, or maybe more recently, in February, last February, you had a resolution supporting again the European Union, supporting again Russia. You didn't vote for it, and your party didn't vote for it. I'm sorry, it's a fact. You take...
Yeah, but there are other facts.
Again, I'm very sorry.
That you're
exactly,
not saying.
And there are different
again,
things in the resolution
you
that you're not
the French
mentioning.
Parliament.
There are other facts.
We voted a bilateral security agreement. You were unable to vote it. You were unable to vote it.
I mean,
so I'm very sorry, but when you look at facts, like you mentioned, there is a true difference between support to a democracy, to a European country which has been attacked by Vladimir Putin and by Russia.
So you're going to send French soldiers? Macron is going to send French soldiers, like he said? Is that what you're trying to do? Are you saying that this conflict, we deserve to send our French soldiers, our French boys and girls to fight that war? I love it when the Macron
says this. Look at the statement.
They have been there. They have been there for since
Can you answer to your votes? Can you answer to your votes? You're sitting in the European Parliament. Can you answer to your votes?
Since Sorbonne won...
Why aren't you supporting Ukraine,
which has been
invaded.
Since Sorbonne won, your president has ruled France.
You're trying to get yourself out of it, but it's literally
and
facts.
And our country has been going down the drain. Europe is being contested in all the elections that you are seeing in
Member
States.
What about your votes, Madam MP?
I think
one at a time. Annabelle Huet, go ahead.
Yes, I think one of the main things that we've been lobbying for is respect for international law. And I think international law in general, in terms of cybersecurity, which you were talking about, there's a bit of a lack of an international treaty on cybersecurity and on cyber defense. So we've been calling as a party for a long time now for negotiations and internationally.
So what do you do in the interim when there are disinformation campaigns, when there are cyber attacks?
Well, we make sure, first of all, that the best and brightest of France don't leave to go abroad, and we make sure that we find all of the best ways to keep them in France.
But you don't retaliate against Russia? One at a time, Annabelle Huet.
I was saying, you present facts like they're the only facts out there, but there's also a fact that you have been killing our diplomacy for the last 10 years.
How come? Mm-hmm.
Well, you got rid of...
You haven't voted. Your party hasn't voted the support.
We used to have the second network in the world.
One at a time.
We used to have the second biggest and most important influential diplomatic network in the world.
Yes.
And Macron came in and said, actually, we're going to defund this and we're going to put all of this money into an arms race. And I think we can all agree here that the objective here isn't a confrontation between two nuclear powers. I think that would be catastrophic. So I think we also need to look at other facts. For instance, the fact that Macron has been endangering our efforts for diplomacy around the world and for peace negotiations.
Can I just
these
say
are
a word
crucial.
On this?
These are absolutely crucial. And these are the facts that you silence and that you never, ever say.
I just want a short point. After you. Okay.
No, I'm really sorry. Just a point. I'm sorry, but you have talked about respecting international law, but the previous day before an illegal referendum in Crimea, Jean-Luc Mélenchon declared Crimea is Russian with applause of this. So how do What do you say about that? Is it respecting international law, really?
What do I say about this?
Yeah.
I say that we have been clear that we want referendums if the Ukrainian people want them, and they
but
do want them.
But it was illegal, this referendum.
The 2014 referendum in Crimea.
I don't remember what Jean-Luc Mélenchon said then, because I was quite young then as well. So I don't remember.
You know, I'm young also, but I don't forget.
Well, good for you.
I just wanted to make one point on defence, on European defence and European diplomacy. We're in a situation today where our future, or the future of our defence, has been decided by the presidential election in the United States. Are we going to pull out of NATO? Is the US going to pull out of NATO? Or are they going to stay in NATO? What we believe in, and what President Macron carries and carried today, is to build European defence industry, to be able to defend himself, defend ourselves.
He said
in
that
case
7 years ago, and
nothing
has happened.
Well, it has actually.
I was cut. I think you're largely having your time.
You're as well, actually, and you still haven't explained your votes. So on the European industry, I'm just going to finish this, and then you'll have it. We have voted
many times.
Yeah.
We have voted the Cloud Act. Nobody voted here. We have launched European defence, including industries in France. You mentioned KNDS Nexter. We have supported it. Again, we are building it.
Patricia Chagnon, the war of attrition that we've seen over the last 2 years in Ukraine has also had impact throughout the rest of the continent. We're seeing that we're badly undermanned when it comes to ammunition, air defence systems, even in countries that have their own domestic production, like France. We heard the French president today talking about the need for Europe to raise its game when it comes to defending itself.
Sure.
Did you agree with what he said in his speech?
Well, listen, it's not exactly the same, and that goes for my colleague here in front of me, Mr. Rodwell. You can't pretend that you just haven't been there for the past couple of years. Mr. Macron has been in power. His alliance has had its say in the EU. So the dismal state today of the EU, with mass migration, with a war on the bridge there, with farmers' movements all over the EU.
My question's about defence.
Yes. Let me just get there, but let me put it into perspective. You let my colleague talk, so I'd appreciate if you let me also develop my thought on the question. The problems of the energy prices soaring. So the problems that we are faced with here today, Macron, Renew cannot say, oh yes, now we finally got the solution. They've been there. Now, with regards to the fence, I am for reinforcing the French defence, and of course for international cooperation. But we have not been there, we have not been in power to defend that. And if we find our French army in that dismal state, if we see that when Germany is buying weapons, it's not buying French weapons, it's not buying Italian weapons, it's buying weapons from outside the EU, I think we need to look after.
Which is what we heard the French president say in his speech.
You agree?
Yes, but it's not. They have been there. They have not defended that. They have been there and accepted that under the so-called umbrella of the EU, the solidarity goes in very, very strange ways. It's about time that we stand up and defend the interests of the French army and of the French armament industry.
We genuinely hope you won't be the ones to do it.
Sybille Douvier.
Yeah, I'm really sorry, but we have only a few minutes left, and we haven't talked as much as we have to about the climate emergency. We haven't mentioned that millions of young people have demonstrated, and that is because of that we obtain the Green Deal. And Emmanuel Macron, since 7 years, his politics is not enough for the climate. For example, in the first discourse.
So let me ask you a personal question on this, because you're 19 or 20?
19
years old. What's your sense? This is a personal question. How much of an issue, because I'm not hearing much talk about climate when I hear debates. We've talked about it a bit tonight, but I'm not hearing much about it on many of the French stations. How much of an issue is it among older people? Is it a generation gap? Is it just your generation that's
no,
interested?
No, it's a global issues. And, you know...
But I'm asking about voters in the June European elections in France. Is there a generation gap on this issue?
Look at the polls.
We see that only 4%. percent of my age, my generation, vote for the Emmanuel Macron candidate. So I think that the politics to tackle climate change since 7 years are not enough at all. And just to mention one point, because we didn't mention it, it's the equality between men and women. You know, this morning I was very, very angry because Emmanuel Macron added just one sentence. You know, like the one sentence, like a communicant said, oh, we have to talk about it. You promised it in 2017. And what is what has made Emmanuel Macron during his these previous years, for example, on a directive in order to protect the woman, he refused a common definition of the rape, which was based on the consent. So when you vote for Emmanuel Macron, which was the grande cause du quinquennat man, you vote for this politics against the equality between men and women. And people have to know it when they want to choose the ballot of Valérie Ayé.
Who voted the abortion in the Constitution, which is a major gain? I mean, I think it's transpartisanship.
Who put it forward?
No, but collectively, you're right.
Yeah,
you're
right. It's a collective victory. It's a collective victory, and some of the Rassemblement National didn't vote.
Let me ask the panel because
on the transpartisan issue,
I am talking about a definition. I am talking about a definition of the rape, which was based on the consent, and you MEPs from your group asked the government to go towards for this victory and to defend the definition of the rape, which was based on consent. So what is your opinion about it? Is it like the Stéphane Séjourné group who asked the government to do
you
it?
You said time is short. Is this a French issue or is this a European issue?
It is a European issue because we want the better Europe for women. We defend the idea of Gisèle Halimi of the Clause de l'Européenne la plus favorisée.
Trying to distinguish themselves from the Macronist candidate, when Valérie Ayer herself said that 80% of the votes were exactly the same between the socialists and the liberals at European level. And you talked about the Spitzen candidate right before.
Oh, you know, for me, feminism is not only a strategy to obtain
one
votes.
One at a time, please.
The three groups, the liberals, the socialists and the right wing at Brussels, they vote together because there's no majority. So they vote together. So if you vote for the socialists or if you vote for the Macronist, it's exactly the same vote.
No, it's not the same at all. We are the only left group which can really change the European policy.
But only because
since
that's exactly
we can
what you do.
Access
it's
to the European
you
Commission,
work hand in but hand with the liberals and with the right.
Do you know European institution? It's
I
been
do actually, yeah.
20 years since the right has the Commission. So we build coalition together in order to obtain victories for social justice. For example,
before,
like the directive on the platforms.
It's really important. I think it's really important that we just remind how the polls are going.
Let's look at the polls. Let me look at the polls. Let me call up those poll numbers, please.
Exactly.
There we have them. So this is a survey that was put out 3 days ago, published by TF1. Where is your party?
It was at
That's not a great
apologies
poll.
For that. Your party is higher than Reconquête. It's at 7%. Apologies for that.
Yeah,
Annabelle Huet, you're right. But in any case, let me ask you. Wait, let's call it up again just to show it. 31%.
Yes.
The national rally, far ahead, nearly double that of the party of Charles Rodwell.
Sure.
But that means 2/3. Of the electorate are not for this Europe of nations that you described at the outset. Are for more Europe.
Your question is not very clear. The thing is that 31%.
Are you in the minority when you talk about a Europe of nations? Is what I'm asking.
We're not. We're absolutely not in a minority. I think that bringing back sovereignty to the nation states is getting a bigger and bigger call. If you look at what you are saying, the difference between the way the EU has been led over the past years and the way that Macron has been leading France, you can see in the numbers today how the French voters are sanctioning this view, this imperialistic view of being ruled by Brussels.
Just one last word, because we're out of time. Charles Rodwell, how do you bring up those poll numbers between now and June if you're at 16%?
I think it's a proof of humility by yours. We're fighting every day because we absolutely support the project that was set. That's in a century which will be defined between a division between two blocks. We have to preserve, we have to protect, we have to build our political independence.
All right, so sticking to the script for now. We're unfortunately out of time. Charles Rodwell, I want to thank Annabelle Huette. I want to thank as well Sybille Duvier, Patricia Chagnon. Unfortunately, no, we're out of time. But thank you for being with us here. We'll have to have you all back before early June and those European elections. Thanks for being with us.